back to Pop Culture Ninja.
Sorry about that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan here with Nathan. Nathan, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm trying to figure out what just happened.
It's Batman, man. It's Batman.
Batman. G. Willikers, Batman.
Yeah, so you and I are coming in off the heels of having gone and seen the Lego Batman movie. And we thought it would be just a cool idea to go back and look at Batman over the years and see how he's evolved or de-evolved in some places and take a look at everything. So,
are you possibly insinuating that not every Batman adaptation, whether it be movie, books, radio, or video game, has been up to the Batman namesake?
All I have to say is Batman versus Superman.
It's funny that of all, but that's the one you went to. I'm not excusing it of anything, but yeah, I think it's cool because we've been doing this now for like, I talk about like we've been doing it a long time, but we're in like the 40-some episodes.
Yeah.
And we've spoken. I mean, we did our very first episode, we were doing a kind of dual review of Batman versus Superman and Civil War.
Yeah.
And we've probably spoken about Batman in passing, but I think Batman is one of those topics you could, I'm sure there are several out there where you have an entire podcast dedicated to Batman.
Yeah.
I don't feel that personally dedicated
yeah.
to Batman. But I thought it would be fun because we did see the Lego Batman.
Yeah.
We saw it last week when it first, they had the screening, and it's now been out for a weekend. So there's probably a chance that a lot of people have seen it as well. But we're not gonna do a typical review. We're not going to do spoilers. We'll talk a little bit about it. But based on the way the movie plays, where it really, I was surprised at how much of Batman's old mythology, as far as the films particularly are concerned, that the series was willing to bring in.
Yes.
And it touches its, you know, I think that's what was fun to some extent about the first Lego movie was that kind of widespread pop culture crossover that it had. It went out beyond just needing to be like a merchandising tool to sell Legos.
Yes.
Although it cleverly was sort of that at the same time.
Yes.
And Batman, Lego Batman is the same way. I mean, yeah, they're going to sell Legos. Yeah, there's a point where Batman needlessly describes all of his other vehicles, you know, just so you could go out there and buy them if you need to.
Right.
Granted, it's done tongue-in-cheek. But there's also a real, and I'm sure this is Warner Brothers pushing as hard as they can, there's a real desire to kind of like just sell Batman for who he is.
Yes.
You know, and kind of, you know, they own most of all the other series that they sort of making fun of. So why not? We'll drop some names and throw it out there. But I guess the result is I was watching this and realizing that, yeah, you can come to this if you enjoyed the Lego movie and if you enjoyed the portrayal of Batman in this movie. But if you really didn't like the first Lego movie, I'd say generally the rule would be you probably won't like this movie. But
yeah.
If you do happen to be someone who's a fan of Batman and maybe didn't care that much for the Lego movie, I think you'll still get something out of Lego Batman.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I thought they did a good job at making this funny. It's a very satirical movie from start to finish on Batman, while telling an interesting Batman story. And so that's one of the things that I appreciated is that from the onset, it wasn't taking itself seriously.
Not overly seriously, no.
Yeah.
Although I kind of agree with you that it happens to tap into, in a very sarcastic, satirical way, the kind of essence of what a Batman story should incorporate. Like, we've complained, thinking you talk about Superman versus Batman. Well, where's the essence of Batman? Where's the essence of who some of these characters are? And while the essence of who they are in this film is a kind of a joke and a stab at who they really are, they still kind of commit to it. So their version of the Joker is a fully rounded character, even though his motivation may be he just wants to be Batman's number one villain. I mean, that's a little silly, but it's hard to come up with a very clear reason for why the Joker is always antagonizing Batman in the comics, other than A, he's insane, and B, he wants an audience. I mean, there's a kernel of potential truth in the direction they go, which is that he's kind of like wanting to be Batman's like longtime buddy,
in a
sense. And Batman's insecurity with being close to people is mocked, you know, here, but it is still sort of the essence of the character. And to me, when I come and I complain about a movie like Batman versus Superman, saying that they miss the boat on who these characters are, the Lego Batman movie at least understands where they come from.
Yes.
And I think that's what will make it interesting. What we want to talk about today is sort of examining the way in which the media and culture has adapted Batman versus mm-hmm. what he was when he began, what he's become since. I mean, that's a pretty lofty topic. You could have, you could do a whole week series on it.
Yeah.
So we'll probably keep largely to what happens in television, what happened in the films and things like that, with the potential, I think, to revisit and maybe even at a later date, maybe even talk about the periods of what Batman was like in the comics. Because I think that's where a lot of the interest is. It's interesting to see in ways in which artists were bringing their own thing to Batman
mm-hmm.
and how the different variations of who Batman was over time developed.
Yeah.
But I think you can definitely see some interesting cultural shifts, even from the beginning, with people trying to decide, well, what do we do with a guy who dresses up like a bat and fights crime? I mean, almost every movie series that they've had has had someone basically ask that question out loud. If not out loud, it's the gist of the film. So, So I think we can kind of start, Nathan, if you're cool, maybe just start sort of at the beginning. Even Lego Batman
kind of begins at the beginning
in one funny scene.
Well, I think what we should do is just maybe even just touch on the beginning being the comics, in the sense that, you know, this is what Batman started. This was his origin story, was comics. And from the beginning, he was the great detective. He was the Dark Knight. He was the great detective. He was, you know... he was the guy who was dressing like a bat and going out and kicking butt. And, you know, so just even, you know, making the nod to that, because I want to get into some things later on with some issues that I've had with some of the development of Batman and where he's gone. But yeah, you know, the early 40s, or was it mid-40s, did a series or couple of short serials or something like that with a Batman. Can you speak to that a little bit, Nathan?
Yeah, so there, Batman doesn't show up until like 1939. So Detective mm-hmm. Comics is like when he first shows up. And you alluded to something there. You call him the great detective. Like, and of course, he's in Detective Comics like mm-hmm. that. He spawns Detective Comics in a sense. He doesn't, I mean, it's gone for about 27 issues before he shows up, but it's probably safe to say that Detective Comics, which eventually becomes DC Comics, survives because of Batman. And that's Bob Kane and Bill Finger writing them initially. And there's a lot of stuff that changes over the years with mm-hmm. it. So what's interesting is the 40s Batman serials, they're not that great.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to also think about the fact that when they come out, they're coming out not very long after, first off, serials are still a relatively new thing.
Yeah.
And the comic book itself is relatively new.
Yeah.
So by 39, you've only got the Batman character himself running for a number of years before they do his first legitimate, like, hey, we're going to make an adaptation.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of time to have a lot of material to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, comparatively, when Batman shows up in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
he's got
villains.
He's got a stable of villains.
Yeah.
He's got, I mean, now what Batman in the 60s chooses to do is questionable, but the point being, every other iteration of Batman that we have is happening when he's got a long and storied history. And that's true. You know, the only other character I can think of that's similar would be Superman, who was arguably more successful with his serials and whatnot. But they had Batman, and then they had Batman and Robin, and both of them were, I don't know, how do you say, just not good?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, they don't quite get the essence of the characters, I don't think. I mean, you had Lewis Wilson and Douglas Croft were Batman and Robin. If you've never heard of Lewis Wilson and Douglas Croft, that's probably not surprising because they don't make much of a splash. They have a small clip that sort of homages them in the Lego Batman. You actually see them on screen for a minute. It's either them or it's the series that comes back. But there's two elements there that weren't anywhere else in before. So what's interesting, when you start with the 40s, The serial is introducing things that later become like canon in a sense for the comics.
Mm.
And that happened, I don't know how much that happened later because there was so much mythology that what happens in the... I think you can make a case that some of what Burton did influenced some mm-hmm. later comic books, maybe. But yeah. the Batcave concept, actually, it has two elements that come in. The first is the Batcave, and then that grandfather clock entrance that he has. Those were not elements, from what I understand, originally. So they called it the Bat's Cave in the 40s, and then they called it the Batcave in the comics. But the Batcave appearance in the comics happens after... It shows up in the serial. So you can kind of poo-poo the serial because it's not particularly great.
Sure.
But you've also got, like, the Alfred who played... William Austin plays Alfred in that. And he looks like the Alfred that we're sort of familiar with. Yeah. Not the Michael Caine version, but when you think of the... Particularly the way he's drawn later in the comics and notably, like, in Batman Anime Series, the trim guy with the little pencil mustache. Yep. That look comes from the 43, like, the Batman, the Alfred who's there. So they take the comic version and they altered him after that point to kind of look like Alfred.
Yeah.
So it's funny because we don't think of it being that influential, but its biggest influence was on the comics. And the comic, and that was so early on in the run of the comics that we probably assume the comics made that up. So it's interesting, the Batcave, you know, look at stupid Batman 40s, but it gave us the Batcave.
Right.
Now, Batman and Robin in the 49... That's Robert Lowry, Johnny Duncan were Batman and Robin again. Who really knows who these people are? They did bring in Commissioner Gordon. As they were facing off against somebody who was just called the Wizard. And then they, you know, the serial's kind of holding a mystery. I will say this about the 49 version. It at least embraces an aspect of Batman that we don't see much in most of the later movies when you get to the 80s. And even the 60s is questionable about this. Mm-hmm. The mystery element. Because, again, it's Detective Comics. It's supposed to be these characters don't really show up and run amok and then, you know, Batman catches them. There's got to be a mystery. There's got to be something for Batman to solve. That's largely, as far as I can think of, lost in almost any other of the movie iterations and the TV iterations. I mean, unless we look at Batman the Animated Series, they retain a lot of his comic bookness there. But when we talk about live-action adaptations, I'd argue that this one in the 40s, while not good in other ways, was at least true to the concept of him being a detective. Mm. And I submit that was probably the case because there was so little of it around at the time that all, you know, they didn't think of Batman as being anything but a detective.
Yes.
In the 40s, at that point, his primary identity was not the Dark Avenger. He was, you said, the detective, the great detective. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think, too, you know, looking at it, I will say this, that you did get hints of the mystery of the Joker in the Michael Keaton version in 1989, where he's trying to figure out who is this guy. Now, they did a whole weird twist on it where it's like, oh, he's the guy who killed your parents. But there at least was an element there where he was doing some background checking. He was trying to put all these pieces together.
From his computer board. But
right.
I mean, like the 40s Batman had this noir sensibility. Yes. He was going out and he's actually doing detective-esque things. I mean, we get a little bit of that very early in the Nolan Batman, but I mean, even in Batman, he's sitting there just in front of all of his boards looking and reading. So I think also it's interesting because as we move in, there's aspects of Batman that we think of now. And one of the things we'll probably kind of just keep touching back and forth on Lego Batman as we go along. You know, one of the things that Lego Batman, of course, has is that you've got Will Arnett doing the voice of Batman. And he's mocking that deep, gravelly voice.
Right.
And, you know, he's always talking regardless of what he's talking about.
Right. Which, interesting, he did the voice of the Batman Brave and the Bold.
He did. So he's done like a kind of legitimate Batman voice. I like his Batman voice.
Personally. I do, too.
I like his Batman voice better than Christian Bale's Batman voice. But... and certainly better than Val Kilmer's Batman voice. But I think what's interesting is that the Batman, so the 40s, and then when you get to Batman 66, they don't have voices. They don't have this lowered rumble.
Right.
And honestly, I never really thought of Batman speaking that way, really, until you get Michael Keaton, like, a Batman.
Right.
And I think it's questionable about what his decision was there. You know, it's trying to give Keaton doesn't have a voice that's very commanding normally. He's almost known as comedian up until that point. We can get to that. So there's questionable of why exactly does he lower. And then later we get the impression he's lowering it so he sounds menacing to villains, you know.
Right.
And the comics then are kind of adapting and adjusting to that fact. So we get to Batman 66. This is its own minefield. But I'm going to say something right up front is – I don't know. People love to rag on Batman 1966.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of question the validity or the wisdom of doing that, because typically the Batman movies I really don't like, or mm-hmm. that I have a penchant for mocking, so to speak, they're the Batman movies that are trying to do something that they just woefully fail at.
Yeah.
And as adaptations go, there are several other Batmans that I would kind of criticize mm-hmm. before I criticize this one. And there's one major like reason for this. My thought is, you always have to kind of compare Batman to where he is at the time in his comic book iteration.
Yeah.
In the 40s, he's this detective. I think it would have been awesome if we had gotten someone who was a real, it's hard to even imagine what something like Orson Welles doing a Batman movie The guys who did like Maltese Falcon. So like seeing someone of that caliber do a Batman movie, it probably would have been fantastic. I honestly still truly believe that if you want to make a great Batman movie, you will hire a great director and then give them Batman of the 40s. Let him be a detective. Strip away all of his gadgets and things like that and let him be the detective. So we're not surprising that that's kind of what we get when we get the early Batmans, though they're still a little silly. But then you get Batman 1966, where Batman was his comic character in the 60s. It wasn't... People look at Batman 66 as being this bright, colorful travesty that was completely, knocking the Batman name. But there's a couple things to remember about Batman. While the stories are nowhere near as silly as they end up being in this 66 version, Batman had changed a little bit in the 60s due to the comics code. Yeah. I mean, I think you had this point, Joker was like pogo sticking on people.
Right.
Mean, they got a point where, okay, the villains can't have guns and things like that. So Batman had grown a little sillier.
Yeah.
But I've seen many interviews with the people who the producers behind Batman 66, and they were never going for a serious adaptation of the character of Batman.
Right.
They wanted something campy. They wanted something silly. They wanted to take Batman and kind of make like the Batman 1966 is closer to like the comic you would find on the side of like a piece of bubblegum.
Right. Right.
You know, like, it's like Archie and Jughead sort of level.
Yes.
Although even Archie and Jughead are now moody and emo thanks to Riverdale or whatever.
Right,
It was like trying to bring Batman back into that circle, I think.
Yeah, well, for me too, like, you got to look at what people were doing in the 60s in terms of film.
And drugs.
60s and 70s. you say that jokingly, but the reality is in the 60s and 70s, you had much of that silly disco hippie feel to so many different things. And let's be real, we look at Star Wars at that time period as a great masterpiece, but there were people that were even pushing for George Lucas to have disco music in Star Wars, and he did not do it. He went with John Williams back when he had some sense. but that's what they were doing back then, And so that was kind of the mold, that was the feel that a lot of this went into. And it worked for the time.
Right. People look at it, and I think they think, look at this, it's so wrong-headed. And you can think it's wrong-headed, but it's not by accident. I mean, no one has a line where you say, where's my shark?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a shark on your foot. This is like Files, Naked Gun, the Files from Police Squad. This is Zucker Brothers level spoofing.
Yes.
Maybe you could argue maybe it's not as witty and concise, but that's what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
You watch Batman, the movie, but he's running off the bomb. Can't find a good place to throw a bomb. And again, there's the kind of... You don't have the gravelly voice, but you definitely have the Adam West voice. I'm trying to disguise my voice, but I'm not trying particularly hard. And in Batman, villains show up and they fight and then they dance on the dance floor.
Yeah.
But you have a pretty good... You have an interesting group of actors portraying these people. I mean, Vincent Price shows up as Mr. Freeze.
Yep.
Burgess Meredith is the Penguin.
Yeah.
Frank Gorshin is the Riddler. Like, these people are having fun. And I, as a kid, had fun watching it.
Yeah.
I, as an adult, have fun watching it. I watch it with my kids. I don't, for a second, take it as my interpretation of Batman.
Right.
But what I really like about it is I think it's the show that sets the standard for saying there isn't necessarily a Batman.
Yes.
You know, the comics have this lock on And even there, there's variation, but this lock on who Batman is. So Batman in the 60s, I saw it. It did some damage in the sense of it made people start kind of just not taking comic books seriously in live action form, that for decades we couldn't get beyond. If a comic is a live action form, it has to be stylized
right
at the wazoo. It can't feel like a real world. People, that would be outrageous.
Yeah.
And even a few years later, when you get the first Superman movie, even though I think it's easy to say that Richard Donner's Superman is of a very different cut than the one before.
Yeah.
Batman, the original series, and the 66 version, and the movie, I like them. They have a special place in my heart. I think that they get a lot of hate, which is fine, except that I think it's important that people acknowledge they were exactly what they set out to be.
Sure. Yeah, and I agree. I think that makes, you know, that makes sense. And then we kind of move into, the Batman Superman hour, the adventures of
Happy Hour. 70s kind of cartoons, the Super Friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Super Friends get some play in the Lego Batman movie. I kind of thought that was cute and funny. And the fact that, you know, Batman is smarting, the fact that he doesn't get invited, but like the Indian chief character from Super Friends is there. And
who
Gleek,
no
the
one
monkey.
Remembers.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I remember Super Friends. I don't have necessarily a lot to say about any of the cartoons that came out related to Batman in that time frame. Again, I don't feel at this point, through the 40s, through the 60s, through the 70s, that you have a version at this point that is trying to faithfully adapt the comic books.
Yeah.
And I there's a part of me that, as far as live action goes, I don't think any version has.
Mm.
The cartoons are a different story. So I'd say these cartoons were trying to be fun. They were trying to be silly. They were trying to be cartoons. They're not that much different from what you get from a lot of the cartoons of the era. The problem being, Max Fleischer's Superman, even earlier, was so good, so captured Superman, that it was almost a shame that we never had a Batman equivalent early in that time period. You don't really have a really good Batman equivalent until the 90s for cartoons, for the animated Batman. But I love the Super Friends and the whole Hanna-Barbera thing. I remember specifically, you know, sometimes they play in prime time and my parents would, like, you know, let me stay and watch. It was fun. Those are what I had. I mean, that was the best you were going to get.
Yeah, there
was. They were also
else.
Mercifully before I really knew Batman as a comic book character very well.
Right.
So I didn't even have a comparison point to say, this isn't Batman. Yeah, but this isn't Batman is something you could probably say about every single version. You just kind of have to step up and say, I'm okay with this being an adaptation. That's what it's supposed to be. So in that vein, I think there's a lot to like about Batman and the Super Friends, and particularly if you have young kids, there's no reason to show them The Dark Knight. There's not a lot of reason to even bring out the Burton movies, depending on their age. There's a lot of fun that can be had with these movies if you know, you just kind of have to roll with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. But then after that, you've got this period of, like, I don't know, 12 or 13 years where, you know, really there isn't anything. I mean, you got stuff going on with Superman. Some of it good, some of it not. Superman, The Quest for Peace. But,
well, it's interesting that you get that far into the Superman. And I think there's a lot of, it's been very hard for them to get Batman movies up off the ground.
Mm.
And there have been efforts all through there. But the thing is, Superman, I think there's still an easy element where Superman lends himself to the special effects.
Yeah.
And Superman, who he is as a character, lends himself. He also had more success as a serial.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
George Reeves, that was a well-known serial. Like, we remember that. We know that. The Max Fleischer Superman cartoon.
Yeah.
Superman had a lot of early success in the other mediums, which, and I think, just lent itself naturally to finally we get to Superman.
With
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
And then you get another Superman 2. Even by Superman 3, it's starting to fall apart.
Right.
You don't really have, though, There's not a lot of other comic book properties being made, though. I mean, Wonder Woman gets on television.
When was that? Do you remember Spider-Man had something early on?
Spider-Man had a very kind of poorly conceived TV show.
Yeah.
And I think it was live action, too, but it wasn't very good. Now, Marvel gets The Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
But The Incredible Hulk is arguably, like, it's different than Batman 66. But
oh, yeah. I mean, well, and what they did with The Incredible Hulk was, that was... I mean, they got Bill Bixby to come in and play Bruce Banner.
Well, David Banner.
David Banner,
essentially,
yeah.
He's supposed to be Bruce Banner. It's so far off from what the Hulk is, though,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that both of those things are kind of what stymied there being anything else for a while. Mm. People had this vision of a goofy Batman.
Yes.
And it took a while to get that. And really what jumpstarts that, I think, is Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns. Because that's when you suddenly have... this gritty version of Batman. He's getting a little darker in the comics as he starts to come out of the comic boat. But then, boom, there's this vision of Batman that's gritty, that's dark, that's sort of unapologetic, that's clearly for older audiences. Mm-hmm. Batman's no longer the bubblegum wrapper character.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of finally gives them... and I don't know what year. Was that 86, 87 that we have The Dark Knight Returns?
I think you're right, yeah.
Somewhere around there. So it kind of finally jumpstarts enough of an interest in what we would... ultimately, they get around to making what would be a dark Batman, you know? And I think that... so it's funny because I'm reading here that at some point CBS in the 70s wanted to make a Batman in Outer Space movie. Which I think we're probably all glad that didn't happen. It was a lot of rights issues.
For that one.
But they wanted to make this dark, serious version of Batman the way he had been originally, like what we're talking about. Someone taking him and returning him to his roots. But nobody wanted that at the time. All the studios are like, we want something like the campy 60s series. Because, that's what Batman is. But he's not. So you had this fight even early on of people trying to say this is what he is in the comics, and then so Columbia turns him down, United Arts turned down, and then again when they do this script, they ultimately they've got a script that's dark, and then people when Dark Knight Returns comes out, which I think is in the 80s, that 86 or 85 or 86, that they're finally in a place where we're ready to make the Batman movie that people interested in Batman wanted to make. The problem, I think, comes in that you get Tim Burton doing it, because I don't know that Tim Burton...
It's the one we want, not the one we need.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they wanted... the guy originally who was trying to make this movie, they were working on all this stuff. They wanted Peter O'Toole to be the Penguin. You imagine a world where there's a Batman movie where Peter O'Toole pulls a penguin. I think I'd love that, particularly.
I know.
You know, David Niven was going to be Alfred. William Holden as James Gordon. Like, just trying to imagine a movie where we have William Holden as James Gordon. That might have been the movie we were looking for. This was going to be a budget of $20 million. It was supposed to be late 83 or for, like, mid-1985. So, they wanted to do this. I'm pretty sure this would have been something almost closer to what Gotham... I'm not a huge proponent of Gotham, but like playing these characters realistically.
Yes.
Like, I think... I can't imagine the Peter O'Toole version of the Penguin
being
what we got either later with DeVito or what we had with Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
You know? So, they were... And at one point... They had even Joe Dante and Ivan Reitman. That might have pushed it more into comedy. I can't see Dante or Reitman making a dark film.
Right.
You know, Dante's done Gremlins, but everything's with a kind of a joke and a nod and a laugh. And they wanted Eddie Murphy and Michael J. Fox as Robin at one point. Now, that's ludicrous, but like, I mean, these are different points along the thing. So you get Tim Burton. What do you think? Let's just talk about it. What do you think about Tim Burton's Batman? I mean, I know we've spoken a little bit about it in the past, but...
Well, first of all, it's interesting because that's one of the movies that really kind of pushed me into, you know, for what Superman did for so many people in the 70s when they saw Christopher Reeve fly. And you if you were to look at it, you know, a cut of it now, an uncut version of it now, an unedited version of it now, you'd be like, this is the worst thing ever. But you got to remember, back in the 70s, seeing Christopher Reeve fly around, you know, Statue of Liberty and all that stuff. That just blew people's minds away.
I still
got
to say, that scene where he flies outside of the Earth's orbit as the sun is rising, that's still a pretty shot. I mean, yeah, you can see the seams, but I'd argue it's a better shot than what they accomplish in any of the other Superman movies.
Right.
I mean, in terms
right.
of pure cinematic, like,
right.
there was that's a wow
right.
kind of a thing.
Well,
you
and
know?
You still, I mean, so much so that they used it in Superman 2, and then they used it in Superman Returns that Bryan Singer did. Because
yeah,
it was
and I didn't
such
like
a,
that shot nearly as much. The
right.
one in Superman Returns, it was not nearly as impressive, despite the CGI.
Yeah.
Play. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, I really enjoyed this Batman. I thought Michael Keaton did a good job because up until that point, he was the comedian. I remember seeing him in the movie where he was in the psych ward.
The Dream Team.
The Dream Team, yes.
Which may actually, I don't know, that may have been a year after Batman, but it was in there, like
in
80,
the same,
it was either 7 or 89, but he did like, he had Mr. Mom,
yeah.
and I think Gung-Ho,
yep.
and Beetlejuice, of
Beetlejuice,
course, with Burton,
yep.
and I think that's where Burton, you know, kind of latched on to him. I think he was an interesting choice, because I wouldn't have picked him to be Batman per se,
right.
so it was interesting that they did. And I, for everything about that movie, I think Michael Keaton's Batman is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he's the Batman and the Bruce Wayne of the comic books, but he's an interesting take.
Well, I think what's interesting is that to me he pulls off that dual persona. He pulls off the, you know, Michael the Bruce Wayne kind of playboy aspect, which was that particular version was more new. You had a little bit in '66 with Adam West, but this really took it kind of to a whole new level where everyone knows Bruce Wayne. He's throwing these lavish parties. He's out in the public eye. But then this is also, as near as we can tell, this is a newer Batman. People are still speaking about the Man Bat in this movie, so he's still relatively new to the scene of what's going on in Gotham, and that's something I find interesting.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, because in Batman the 89 version, we talk about the detective aspect. To be fair, there are a lot of scenes of characters essentially doing what we would consider to be detective work,
mm-hmm.
but it's Vicky Vale and
right.
the Robert, what's the actor's name, you know, who...
the commissioner.
Not the commissioner, but the other journalist who's
working with her.
I can't think of the actor's name, but he, you know, the two of them are investigating Batman.
Mm-hmm.
There's more detective work happening on the part of the police force and everyone
mm-hmm.
who's trying... You know, the mystery is, who's the Batman? That's not much of a mystery for an audience member.
Right.
But that's interesting, because that element kind of does exist in the who's Batman, and
yeah.
that persists through some of the movies. The 89 Batman, to me, it's interesting because that had so much hype.
Mm-hmm.
My family didn't really go to the movies much at that point in time, so
mm-hmm.
we never got to the theater to see it. So we spent so much time over the summer of 88 hearing everyone talk about this wondrous movie and how great it was. And honestly, going in that summer, Ghostbusters 2 was a movie I wanted to see, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I knew Ghostbusters, and then,
yeah.
you know, suddenly there's Batman, and it materializes, becomes a giant thing. So the next fall or winter or whenever Batman finally gets released on VHS,
yeah.
you know, when I finally see it as a kid, I'm in fifth grade, I'm a little disappointed by it. I mean, visually, it's impressive. Visually, it's sort of Anton Furst, like his design is so great. And it's kind of coming off of Blade Runner as an only other movie I can really think of for that, or maybe Gilliam's Brazil, where they spent so much time building a whole city. These people are standing in the middle of a city. That doesn't really prevent it from still being kind of like a backlot, though.
Right,
you know?
Right.
The movie feels very artificial. I'm probably in the minority here. I hated the Jack Nicholson Joker.
Mm.
Couldn't stand it.
Hmm.
Think it's stupid. In fact, I think the problem is Nicholson does an awesome job of playing a wild out, crazed version of Jack Nicholson.
Mm.
You know, he just goes full Nicholson. He's always been crazy in movies. We've seen him show up and get kind of nuts in The Shining
yep.
and in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Easy Rider. You know, see that Nicholson, and we want to see him cut loose. We want to see him be crazy. I can't remember if Witches of Eastwick, he played the devil.
Yeah.
That's another movie. They just let him, tear the scenery apart. And he does that in Batman, and he's great at doing it. But let's face it, that isn't that far removed from the Cesar Romero Joker from the 60s. People talk about Dark, and I remember Nicholson has some ludicrous quote where he was mad that they didn't ask him to play the Joker in The Dark Knight. And he was like, I told Heath it was a dark character to play. That may be true, but you didn't play it dark.
Right.
I can't imagine that Nicholson lost sleep over the scene where he joy buzzers Jack Palance to death.
Right.
You know, actually, Jack Palance might have made a more interesting Joker.
Right.
I get why people like it, but why people like it is that it's Nicholson just going way over the top.
Right.
And Nicholson being Nicholson. That is not that character really at all. And it's interesting because even a few years later when you start to get the Batman animated series and you have
Mark Hamill
do his Joker, he doesn't do it anything like Nicholson. No one else ever, for how iconic that's supposed to be, you don't see anyone ever do the Joker. The comic book Jokers don't try to be like Nicholson.
Yeah, no.
Nicholson's thing, it's his own. I'll give him that. I just didn't like it. And as a result, I don't know that I like the movie that much because he overwhelmed it so much. I wanted more Michael Keaton, Batman. Mm. I wanted more of what was happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the joke, I like the Prince soundtrack is a weird deal too because it doesn't I love it for what it is. But that you have Danny Elfman's beautiful gothic score and then the Prince music. It's just Burton is throwing all this stuff out there. And I don't know that it really works. I mean, I hate to say it. Also, here's another thing. It's probably safe to talk spoilers for this. I'm definitely
going
into rant mode here. But Nathan, what do you think? You mentioned earlier about the twist where it turns out that the Joker instead of Joe Chill is the guy who killed Batman's parents. We don't even get Joe Chill mentioned in this.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, here's the thing is that during this time, I wasn't as familiar with the Batman comic.
Right, and but I mean, looking at it now.
Looking at it now, I don't know. I kind of see what Burton was going for, but I'm not. Now you have more of a revenge tale than you do Batman Detective Dark Knight. Like Batman's always been driven by the death of his parents. But this almost felt like it was turning into a revenge tale.
And it cheats a little because Batman is driven to be a certain thing. Part of that certain thing is he's going to uphold the law and justice. And he's not going to purposely kill somebody in a sense. And we still have that kind of thing where, does he kill the Joker? Does he fall to him? You know? But there, you're right. There's this stupid sensibility that says in order for Batman to really to care about defeating the Joker, he has to have a personal vendetta, which is basically completely against this concept of Batman. Joker wants to kill people in Gotham City. That's all he
needs.
I mean, technically, Batman's already faced him off as Napier, and he was a criminal then.
Right.
He doesn't need any more. And then on top of that, he puts Vicki Vale in jeopardy, and we know that Batman's not going to like that either. There's tons and tons of reasons for the Batman to want to defeat the Joker without entering that.
Yeah.
The problem I have with that idea is it kind of starts to hobble. It distorts the idea, and Batman, the Lego version, makes a lot of fun of this. It distorts the purpose and the importance of Batman's parents dying in front of him.
Yeah.
And I think it actually does something even worse, which is it sets a tone for many, many, all the way to the Marvel movies, superheroes later, to still have daddy issues.
Yeah.
It introduces, Batman was never a guy I felt who truly had daddy or mommy issues. Like, so the fact they were dead.
Right.
I mean, they drive him in a specific way.
Right.
But the Burton movie sets the tone that Batman has been, somehow crippled because he lost his mommy and his daddy. And there's also this idea that the villain always has to be involved in the creation of the hero.
Yeah.
And we start to have these movies where they shoehorn the villain and the hero into this symbiotic relationship that doesn't always make sense. Suddenly everyone's got to be related. Suddenly there's got to be this really intense... I actually find, it's probably a good segue, I find what Burton did with Batman Returns much more interesting than what he did with Batman. Yeah. Now, lots of people don't think that. They think Batman Returns is a worse movie than Batman. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a worse movie. I think it's a very different movie. I think Batman Returns is a very good Tim Burton movie, but not a very good Batman movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair enough. I mean, I just, you know, for me, I think probably what differs you and I from Batman is that I didn't not like Nicholson as the Joker. And so for me, I'm okay with that. And I really enjoyed Keaton as Batman. And so I think that's probably what puts it a little bit kind of higher on the list for me as, you know, as enjoying the movie.
And I think it's fair to say, like, I enjoyed the design and the it's not that I really dislike the movie and think it's a bad movie.
Right.
It's just that those elements, there was so much effort. Here's a movie with an immense amount of money poured into it, more so than any of the other Batman movies. And they get so much right about it.
Right.
I even like Michael Goh's version of Alfred.
Yeah.
And I like the Batcave, and I love looking at it. And I can still watch it and enjoy it. I don't dislike it. I guess that's what I should say.
Yeah.
I'm just, I feel like there's a lot of things there that disrupted it from being the Batman movie it could have been. And it also sets a tone for the franchise.
Yeah.
That this is another thing that sets this idea that, like, you look at some of the movies we got after this, they set a tone and say, we need these artificial worlds. We need to have these characters.
Yeah.
And what did you think of Batman Returns? Because I thought that's when Burton just said, forget it. We're going to go completely artificial.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed that one. I thought Danny DeVito as the Penguin was... I liked him as a choice for the Penguin. To me, it was brought to life like that. Michelle Pfeiffer, at the time, I remember having a crush on her. And so, you know, seeing her as Catwoman was spot on for me.
It was something, right? It was probably a little... Yeah, it was a...
We'll just leave it at that.
I mean, you go from Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt, who were bringing this sort of like... that, you know, they definitely were making her a little more even seductive than she was. And then they go with the Michelle Pfeiffer thing was just... It's like straight out there. You're like... This isn't a bold choice for a PG-13. I mean, like, the whole movie, they're like, this is like, you know.
How much pleather can we put on her?
Right, then later they get nipples on the batsuit. Like, the Schumacher versions are like 50 Shades of Grayson. I mean, it's just, that was an unfortunate road. I think introducing leather into the bat. I mean, we got the costume. It's a little fetishistic. There's people who have written into our articles about that kind of, you know, Batman is sort of like the is the alternative icon, if you will. You can make cases for that, but Batman Returns is Burton working out all of his weird kinks and eccentricities on screen. It kind of works for some of the characters. I like the Catwoman and I like the Penguin, but I like them. I don't like them as villains. I like them as kind of weird, messed up people who don't really know what they're doing and they're trying to find their way. And so is Batman. Like, in a weird way, it's like they take all the elements of Batman's persona, who he is, the orphan child, and they spin him off over here and turn him into the Penguin. Like, this is the dark side of Batman as an orphan who wants acceptance.
Yeah.
Then they take his, I like to dress up in costumes and do crazy stuff. And I'm a little bit, you know, fighting back against the world. And they spin it off into Catwoman. And then they take that part where he's the you know, that darkness of him being this billionaire. He's a billionaire and on the face of it. And they spin him off into the Christopher Walken character.
Right.
So it's like he takes all of Batman's pieces and he makes the villains shards of Batman's personality, which I thought was like fascinating, but it also makes Michael Keaton fall even more into the backdrop.
Yeah.
Because I thought this was a movie where they really could have beefed up his being a detective, trying to figure out what is the Penguin's angle.
What is the connection between all three of them?
Is Catwoman. And visually, it was neat to look at.
Yeah.
It was weird that they set it at Christmas. There's a lot of things to like about it. But I loved the characters. I loved what was happening. But it was a weird noir-esque movie. It just didn't fit Batman. Like, at no point was I felt like I was watching Batman the Hero.
Right.
You know, I was just watching a weird felt like a college level deconstruction of Batman. Like I was reading a term paper while watching a bunch of trippy crap happen. I'm not opposed to it. Of that entire series, the four Batman movies that are made, I like that one the best.
Yeah. And I think for me, just, and again, you know, keep in mind that I am a couple years younger than you. So for me, my thoughts and my memories are going to fall differently than yours. So for me, the Batman just stands out because it was the first time as a younger, you know, as a young kid, and like you, didn't go and see it in theaters, but I remember sitting there with my brother and my father watching it, you know, during that fall Christmas time. You know, they had the Pepsi commercial or the Coke commercial at the beginning of the movie.
And the Pizza Hut, like they deliver pizzas to the back end. And, you know, it's funny because my sister, who's even a bit younger still, she, I think the one that caught her attention was Batman Forever, which was one more removed. And you and I are probably sitting there by Batman Forever.
Yeah.
What do you think about that one?
You know, here's the thing.
Because you swapped directors out for Joel Schumacher. I think it's fair to say he's drawing from Burton, but it's a different vision.
You know, I enjoyed Val Kilmer as Batman to a certain extent. His Bruce Wayne, I wasn't as big of a fan of, but I liked his Batman portrayal. I enjoyed Chris O'Donnell as Robin, although even back then I remember, like, he's a little too old to be Robin.
That's where it gets really strange.
Yeah.
I think people say, well, you know, like, there's the line in the Lego Batman movie. Yeah. He's not my son. Really? Because if he's not, that's weirder. Really crazy. I mean, but, you know, it's definitely odd, I think. Well, even Burt Ward, like, you watch the Batman 60s, he's like, dude, he's kind of old. Like, he got the tights and everything.
Yeah.
And O'Donnell's costume doesn't, you know, it's not like, like Michael Cera rip and tears the pants off.
Right.
But, that it's hard to make that relationship work on screen because it seems so weird.
Yeah.
And Schumacher doesn't even seem to avoid the weird undercurrents. Like, we get some shots of Batman's butt in the rubber suit.
Right.
He's so, like, taken with all the fetishistic costumes. And, you know, Nicole Kidman's character is a complete throwaway.
Right.
I really disliked the villains in this movie.
Yeah.
They're so over the top. Jim Carrey is at the height of his, like, popularity at this point.
What are you, The Mask, Liar Liar?
Dumb and Dumber. Well, The Liar Liar is later, but Dumb and Dumber and The Mask have come out. This is, like, 94.
Yeah.
And I think he's about to head into, The Cable Guy, I think, comes next. So it's, like, the next summer. So this is, like, summer 95, I guess. So maybe Cable Guy's later, but it's in that time period. He's done Dumb and Dumber. He's come off of Ace Ventura.
Yep.
He's had The Mask. He's had three big
hits.
And then he's in this movie, and you're kind of waiting to see what he's going to do. And then Tommy Lee Jones has just had a really great run with The Fugitive and whatnot. And then you just see them. And what I would have expected from a Tommy Lee Jones Two-Face, he's just screaming and blathering. There's no nuance. There's no sense of even being two different people.
Yeah.
He throws the coin a few times, and that's about it.
And I remember back then being disappointed that we didn't get Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face, because
that at least would have been something. It would have been potentially interesting. I think at that point, though, they were so far off.
Right.
Batman, and they even had that holy rusted metal Batman.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be making fun of the 66 Batman. Batman Forever is pretty close in tone. To the point that I actually enjoyed some of it because of that.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments of that movie that I just was like, gave up and said, I'm kind of having a good time. The neon was weird.
Yeah.
The neon, the idea to cook in this day glow thing. But it's almost like you get this very trippy, weird, you know. It's almost like Batman's going through weird little phases. Like, in the 60s, he's got his happy, dippy version. And then he's his emo teenager. And then he's like, I'm on drugs.
Right.
And
I think part of the issue, too, is they tried to do a lot more with the psychology of Bruce Wayne and Batman and the dichotomy.
That was a waste.
But
it was so on the nose.
Yeah.
It was like, let's talk about it. Let's try to mine it. And they really didn't need to do that, I didn't think. I thought all that stuff was terrible.
Yeah.
And the Joker, or not the Joker, the Riddler trying to have some sort of enterprise. Yeah. But I think that, you know, they almost vindicate Nicholson and DeVito, because at least Nicholson and DeVito were kind of, they're committing to these characters.
Right.
This was a case of two reasonable, I mean, Carrie can be a good actor.
Right.
And we know Tommy Lee Jones could be a good actor. This was a case of two people just embarrassing themselves, not understanding the material.
Right.
But I think it goes back to Joel Schumacher doesn't understand the material. Yeah. He doesn't want to make a dark Batman.
Right.
He wants to make a glowy, happy, fancy, free,
yeah,
fabulous Batman.
Right, right.
So,
yeah.
I feel like they kind of kill, they start to kill the super, like, the superhero franchise is getting kind of, like, beaten to death at this point again.
Yeah.
What did you think about Batman and Robin?
Okay, so, people are going to string me up for this. I actually enjoyed Clooney's portrayal of Bruce Wayne in this one. I thought he did a good job at you know, that and probably because he was at that time the ritzy playboy
in
person,
fear. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so I liked his portrayal of Bruce Wayne. I liked the interaction between him and Alfred, and, you know, Alfred's dying in this one. Again, spoiler alert. But doesn't die.
Spoiler alert.
That's
again.
Right. But, you know, I like those tender moments where he reflects back on his childhood with Alfred. You get some, you know, interesting flashbacks with things like that. I thought it made for interesting in that part. But now, okay, going back to Chris O'Donnell, now it makes a little more sense that, you know, George Clooney is slightly older at this point as an older Batman, having Chris O'Donnell, but Chris O'Donnell is still over 18, so it still doesn't make sense that he's a ward living with Batman.
No, it doesn't. It's like by choice at that point, my friend.
The nipple suit.
The nipple, there's a lot more of that, and then you even get Alicia Silverstone. She has to turn around so you see her butt. It's a Batgirl.
Well, again, at this point, you know, I've got a crush on Alicia Silverstone, so that part didn't bother
me
so much.
Well, let me ask you about this. What about, so they get Poison Ivy. And I like Uma Thurman, but I think that Uma Thurman portrayal could have possibly turned me off Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
She was later the same year in Gattaca, and that kind of, like, you know, okay, I'm good.
Redeemed
with
it a little bit for
you. But, like, her voice in that was so unsexy, if I can say that. Like, I don't know how to say it in a way. It was, like, it kind of had, like...
It was almost this
drag
queen-y.
I mean, I don't want to be offensive, but it kind of it was very bizarre what they were doing there. They made her up in such a way it was not flattering. And then the Bane.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of people forget that Bane was in this movie. Yeah. He looks like a Mexican luchador wrestler with, like, tubes sticking out of his back that are running like Nickelodeon Gap in and out.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger. Oh my goodness. You take Freeze, who is potentially...
Freeze.
Yeah. Oh, and he's like, Ice Age, chill. The dinosaurs, chill. We were trying to remember the name. What was he said all the time? Chill. Wow. It's such a nightmare of a movie. You mentioned all those scenes you talked about. I don't, with Clooney being Bruce Wayne. I don't remember any of that stuff.
Yeah.
It was all overshadowed by some of the stupidest and poorly shot, like, action scenes.
Yeah.
That, like, he was trying to, like, out...
Do the
out,
60s.
Outblitz the 60s version in some way. And I think he did. I think it's an abomination.
Yeah.
There are actors I love who show up in there. John Glover shows up as a evil mad scientist who mentions, and it's horrible.
Yeah, it's such a waste of the character.
It's a waste of every... Yeah, there's not... I'm not sure there's a consolidated 2 minutes of that movie that are good for a full 2 minutes.
You know, I would have almost been... I think it would have been more interesting to have Schwarzenegger playing Bane and seeing him kind of, you know, pull out that as opposed to Mr. Freeze.
I almost feel like Schwarzenegger doesn't really belong in the Batman universe at all. Like, it's a stunt cast.
Yeah.
And his character is so terrible that you're not doing anybody any favors. It was so...
Right.
Bad on so many levels, and it was so funny to see people kind of fall over themselves to try to defend it initially, like before, like, but we were just at the cusp of the time when the internet was starting to develop its own voice.
Yes.
In 97, so you're starting people to be like, this is wretched garbage.
Yes.
And, you know, that was a very well deserved backlash. That's a close to unwatchable movie. I honestly think I don't disagree when you said Clooney could have been an interesting Bruce Wayne, but he was given no interesting scenes.
Right.
I think Clooney, particularly that time period, or even a few years later, as he started to become more of a better actor, he could, like, but a year later, he's doing Out of Sight, which is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
He's doing even The Peacemaker, where he's a little bit better even there. And so it's not that he doesn't have the range then, he just wasn't given much to work with.
And I would agree with that, yeah.
Is there a stupider Batman scene in any movie than Batman, than Bruce Wayne, or no, Batman pulling out the Batman credit card?
Yeah.
The Batman credit card. So here's Batman's secret identity, and he's pulling out the Bat credit card because he's been hit with pheromones.
Yeah.
Such, there's nothing to say. But here's the thing, if we take away, because people can rag on these two movies all day long. They had a quote, you go back to Batman 89, I remember when Kevin Smith did something and he called out, I think jokingly, Tim Burton for his, saying that the ending of Burton's Planet of the Apes copied something that Kevin Smith had written in a comic book. And Burton was very dismissive and said, well, I don't know about that. I don't read comic books. And Tim Burton said, Kevin Smith said, and that explains Batman. And I think his point there being that, yeah, Tim Burton remembered probably what he'd seen in the 60s, maybe remembered a comic book, maybe had flipped through The Dark Knight Returns,
right,
but was not someone who knew that source material, right, cared about it. Joel Schumacher, I don't think, had seen anything but the 60s Batman.
Right, right.
You can't expect these things to be good, I think, when they don't understand who Batman is.
Yeah.
And I think that Batman Returns, Batman and Robin, and Batman Forever, they're all, in a sense, bad Batman movies.
Yeah.
We might like some of them for varying reasons.
Right.
But none of them are a good, I don't even think they're a good adaptation because they stray so far from who the character is.
Yeah. And I mean, I would agree with that, 100%, that there is, so in 92, you have Batman the Animated Series that comes out. The same year that Batman Returns comes out. And that, to me, is the purest adaptation of Batman. You have Kevin Conroy as Batman. You have Mark Hamill as the Joker, which establishes Joker as Batman's villain. You see him more than any other times. But it also brings in these other characters like Poison Ivy, which set up for, the Joel Schumacher version of Batman and Robin, which, again, I agree with you. I think her adaptation of Poison Ivy was absolutely atrocious. But you have all these characters and you have these nuances. And I remember watching an interview with Kevin Conroy. I think it was on one of the extra features. And he said, I was going for like this Hamlet-esque reading where I would change my voice slightly to disguise it. But this is the same person. He's got a duality within him that he struggles with. But this is the same person. So I don't want to go into the deep, dark voice and you can't recognize me, type thing. But there is enough of a change that this is a different character. This is the same person, but a different character.
And that was the strength of the animated series.
Yes.
They capture that in a way that almost none of the others, they got that duality, but you always feel like you're watching the same character.
Yeah.
And the character work was so much stronger. I think Batman animated series is the best Batman adaptation we have, hands down. The one I like the most. It has that feeling it takes place in the 30s, even though it might not exactly. But it keeps that dark world with the Zeppelins floating above and almost feeling like Metropolis or something like that. The first episode, my memory is that the first episode pulled in a relatively, for people who didn't read the comics, obscure character in the Man-Bat.
Yes.
And what was cool about that was it was sort of acknowledging right off the bat, hey, this is an animated show, so we could do things. Man-Bat would be ridiculously expensive to kind of do without doing this stop-motion-y kind of thing, And there he is. He's in the first episode, and there's that kind of duality, too. It's funny because we have Batman, who's the Batman running around, but here's a real
Man-Bat.
Who's the Bat, and it introduces the supernatural, or at least, like, other supernatural, beyond supernatural, but kind of like otherworldly, unnatural, it's scientific, but element right up front. And he's a detective. Even the first episode, he's trying to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah.
And Clayface follows shortly after, and we get that, and that's another character very difficult to bring out in the medium of the special effects of the time, and they do a great job, like Commissioner Gordon, when they finally get around to introducing Robin, Ra's al Ghul, like, I mean, is there, can you make any more argument for Batman the Animated Series in the fact that it brings in, it completes a completely out of the blue character with Harley Quinn, and the comics decide to run with her, and you know, now she's, you know, she's this element of the Suicide Squad and everything. This, that character's just completely made up, but they do such a great job of establishing her, and Hamill's Joker's like kind of spot on.
Right.
I feel like there's a greater symbiotic relationship between Batman the Animated Series and then the comic books at that point. Like, they start to kind of go in and out. And the lot of the anime, I really love Batman Mask of the Phantasm. That's one of my favorite of the Batman movies, because it feels so, and they introduce a new character.
Yes.
And they even do one later, the one where they bring a Mr. Freeze. I think it's a direct-to-DVD. I like that, too. Yeah. Like, pretty much anything they did with that.
Yeah.
I haven't watched, I know you had mentioned, like, Batman Beyond and Batman the Brave and the Bold, I think.
Yeah, so Batman, well, just, you know, one thing about that is, you know, Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill do such a good job with their characters that from 92 until just recently, it was just this past year, 2016, Mark Hamill officially retires from playing the voice of the Joker by finishing off with the Killing Joke.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate choice.
But regardless, he became the definitive Joker, and Kevin Conroy finishes with the Arkham Knight. And that's his final send-off of the voicing of Batman. So you're talking about, you know, over 20 years of portraying a character and doing a voice as iconic as Batman and Joker. And that's something to, you know, tip your hat to, because that's impressive.
And I think we kind of, at that point, we kind of get to the end for a while of where we see Batman on screen in what you think of as this comic book iteration. You know, then we don't see any Batman for a long time.
Yeah.
We get Catwoman. Which is like, it's so, and then there was Birds of Prey too, you remember, they're trying to do the crossover
yeah,
and it just
yeah.
doesn't work out.
Yeah.
They're not even worth mentioning, I don't think. I mean, Catwoman, such a travesty.
Well, let's go back to Batman Beyond for a minute, because again, Kevin Conroy is coming back, he's doing the voice of Bruce Wayne, who is significantly older at this point. He's looking to just hang up everything, and so now gangs have come in, they're running over Gotham, which is now set in the future, technology, everything, and through series of circumstances ends up taking on a younger protege, Terry McGinnis, who's voiced by Will Friedle, who's actually a phenomenal voice actor, and to me, he actually does a really good job at also playing this dual, this character that is one character, but almost you can sense the split. You can sense the division within him, because he's got a similar story. But Will Friedle puts this off masterfully. And you have, what's interesting is Will Friedle is the young, he's got the muscle, he's going to go in and he's going to take care of business. And Kevin Conroy playing Bruce Wayne is still the brains behind the operation. And it's clear that that this new Batman in Batman Beyond, he's going to be the second class, second tier Batman. He's never going to live up to who Batman was. And he's okay with that, because he learns and he develops and he gets better as he goes along. But you still have this sense that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And, you know, several jokes and references are made to that effect, even. And so then you go silent for a while on Batman until you have Batman Begins with Christian Bale coming out. And again, you're taken deeper and darker into the rabbit hole that is becoming Batman.
Yeah, I think my favorite Batman movie, the live action movies, I would say is Batman Begins, particularly of the Nolan series. I loved really what they did with it. I know a lot of people had, there was a this is where I think adaptation, you're getting someone who's very carefully trying to adapt Batman into the character they want to see, into their own style, but still trying to really hold on to what makes him the character in the comics.
Yeah.
And I think that this is what needs to be taken away as we go forward and we ever see new versions of these of these characters done seriously. you can say what you want about Nolan, but he does capture, I think, there's an element of Batman kind of being a detective a little bit in the film, I feel like. Mm-hmm. The way they handle the Scarecrow, it's nice that they give him some, like, not lower tier villains, but villains that we haven't seen before on screen. Like Ra's al Ghul, bringing Ra's al Ghul in and adding an element of mystery to who Ra's al Ghul actually is. I thought that worked. I liked the elevated trains. People talk about how gritty and real The Dark Knight was, but I actually liked that element of it being just slightly fantastical.
Yes.
Not that elevated trains are fantastical, but you know, Gotham City has this look that come off of like popular science cover or something. You know, there's that idealized, it looks like the 1930s, but we know it's modern time, bit. And the whole plan and the way the scenes are coming at the very end, and then the Tumblr comes out. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind really almost anything that was done with that movie. I wasn't a huge fan of the Rachel Dawes character in either movie, but I liked, this is where Bruce Wayne and Batman are kind of being merged together.
Yes.
In a sense, because as Bruce Wayne puts on the Batman costume and he does things, and that's kind of what happens. Not a fan of the Bale voice, but I liked his portrayal overall. Mm. I thought that what he's doing with the character is interesting. It's a character piece. It's a psychological character piece about Batman.
Right.
That's new.
At the time. I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I'll admit, I like this one, I think, the best out of The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, the Nolan series. I agree. I mean, to me, when you put Liam Neeson in almost anything as that, like, mentor-type character, he pulls it off well. That's his niche.
There's a nice little twist. Yeah. They twist it up a little bit because, you know, he's almost always, to that point, the nice character.
Right.
He's not normally the villain. You
right.
don't see him have this imposing kind of sensibility to him.
Right. But you don't even know that until closer to the end. Which,
well, that's what I'm saying.
They
kind of play it. You have him in the beginning, and then you have him kind of come back.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I agree. I mean, I enjoyed his portrayal of it. I agree with you. You know, I think Honest Trailer does the spoof that they do, and it's like, you know, listen to this guy, you know, with throat cancer for 2 hours, you know.
Just overplayed a handle.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, swear to me.
Right.
Like, you can watch that scene and be like, this doesn't quite, you know, it's out of piece with the tone. But, like, they have some great character act. Tom Wilkinson in there. It's Cillian Murphy as the Scarecrow. And honestly, like, I love through all three movies. I think that Gary Oldman nailed Commissioner Gordon. Like, that's a great.
I agree.
The only reason we can have a Gotham where they make Commissioner Gordon the primary character, I think, is because Oldman makes a convincing idea that you could see this series through Gordon's eyes and have it be perfectly palatable.
Yes. Yep. No, I agree. And actually, I misspoke because right before this, The Batman, that animated series we were talking about, The Batman, comes out in 2004, where Batman Begins comes out in 2005. Yeah. I've watched most of the series, and I've enjoyed it so far. It takes some interesting twists. Batman is he starts out as a new character. The police are hunting him. He eventually becomes established. They bring in Commissioner Gordon. They begin to try to work together on solving cases and, you know, and actually form an alliance. And so to me, it's a good adaptation, a good Batman story. Different than what you're going to find with the animated series, different than what you're going to find with, you know, the comics and things like that. Although at this point, remember, the comics have completely shifted and changed. So,
we're in a different kind of area. We've had some very dark stories at that point, which of course brings us to The Dark Knight. I don't know how much I should also back up and say, loved Michael Caine, of course, as Alfred.
Yes,
he does a great job there. I also really enjoyed that I feel like Batman Begins did manage to capture the Batman relationship with his parents, the Bruce Wayne with his parents, and do a reasonably commendable job of building that in to who he is as a character and giving Batman a potential for an arc, which is why we can have three movies, is that Batman has this, we see him developing who he is. It is very much Batman Year One, even though he's an older Batman.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see him being a young kid exactly. And here he is starting out. And then what I like and appreciate about the next two Batmans is it's basically the fallout of his decisions that he makes in both Batman and The Dark Knight. So think it's probably safe to say that in a similar, not in a similar way, in a completely different way,
yeah,
Heath Ledger overwhelms the Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Not just with his death, which hangs over it, but because if it hadn't been a good portrayal, nobody would have cared.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that he just overwhelms it so much with his whole persona.
Yes.
What's going on there is crazy. I think it's probably safe to say in some ways that's not quite the Joker we're familiar with either, but it's a mm-hmm. very compelling... It feels psychologically right.
Yes.
Like, in fact, the thing that's so amazing about Heath Ledger is it's 180 degrees from Nicholson.
Yes.
Nicholson's just amplifying Nicholson. Ledger's
right.
throwing away everything that's Ledger.
Right.
You don't even see him.
No, yeah.
At all. Not ever in that movie. And it had been very fascinating to see him on the other side of that.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we have a couple movies he made, the Dr. Parnassus and stuff that
yeah.
came out after, but like, you never really got
right.
to see what would he have done after this?
Yeah.
Or would he play this character again? It's fascinating. It's a great movie. I love it.
Yeah.
You have any thoughts on it? Because it almost stands alone to
yeah.
me. It's like...
Yeah, here's the thing with it. Heath Ledger as the Joker was phenomenal. I remember when I first heard he was being cast as the Joker, I was not impressed. I didn't think it was going to really work. I didn't think he was going to do much with it. And I remember seeing him in theaters, seeing that movie in theaters, and being blown away by how much, and I'll give Christopher Nolan the credit for this, how much Christopher Nolan amped up Batman without losing Batman. He maintained the characters. I felt like he took it up a notch. The interaction between Christian Bale and Michael Caine, I felt, was even more dynamic, and it was even more involved and in there.
It worked, perspective was good.
The depth of all the characters, I thought, was, you know, well developed and defined. He managed to pull in a few different villains without overwhelming it with villains, which in superhero movies, let's face it, that's hard to do. Usually when they start bringing in two or three villains and kind of combining them and bringing them all in at once, it overwhelms the story, and you're kind of like, this isn't that great. But he manages to bring in Two-Face, which would have been nice to see him in other things, but he brings him in, has the character, and then dismisses the character well, I felt. You know, he resolves that conflict well. He resolves the Joker conflict
I personally like Two-Face.
Gang, right.
Handled, yeah.
He resolves the gang conflict well. You have three major conflicts going on with the gangs and the Joker and Two-Face, and he brings them all in and he does it well and develops them all well on their own merit.
Yeah, you got a lot of internet Weisenheimers that like to point out all the plot holes in there. And I
sure.
get it. Like, some of the stuff overreaches a little bit. The two ships,
sure.
you know, which again, like a Batman kind of
right.
takes. The two boats is
right.
even better than that. The two boats.
Right.
But I, again, even though we get a more realistic Batman, I don't think we're still in the real world
here. Right.
And I really enjoyed the way the film ended, where they give this idea of Batman making a certain decision and it seeming heroic, but really you're sitting there like, this is a lie. You know,
see,
like,
yeah.
it sets the scene. But I liked that, like, you get this idea of, okay, he's willing to go this far, but what's the fallout?
If we didn't have The Dark Knight Rises, I would not have been okay with that decision. I would have been frustrated with that, and I would have, I would not have enjoyed the movie as much as I do now, having The Dark Knight Rises and seeing, like you said, seeing the fallout of that decision
yeah.
come back to bite him. I can appreciate that decision now.
And I think to be fair, I wasn't, and you probably were not either, I was not disappointed in the ending, though, when it happened, because I felt Nolan had set up this world that we're going to see what happens
mm-hmm.
next.
Yeah.
Like, there was no feeling that ending, and this is the opposite of what happens later when you get Superman versus Batman, you feel like the director isn't necessarily on board with
yeah.
what Batman is saying here, but you can appreciate Batman for wanting it to be true,
right.
like thinking this is the right thing to do.
Right.
You can kind of admire him for taking that step, while knowing that this is not going to lead anywhere good.
Yeah.
And Nolan never really seems to suggest otherwise.
Right.
So we're kind of running down on time here. So
yeah.
what did you... Dark Knight Rises, to me, I like all three movies, but it is a bit... It kind of is a mess in some ways.
Yeah, I think we have what we have with a lot of actors, directors, producers, people who dedicate a significant portion of their time and life to series. To me, it was like, I don't want this thing to end, and we're just going to keep going with it.
We're
going to
stuff as much stuff. Yeah. We know this is, actually, it's almost different. It's like, I'm not going to make another one. So yeah. Let me cram it full yeah. of as much
but,
stuff
but that's
as
what I
can
mean,
get in there.
Because,
yeah.
because it's the last one. How much can I put in? How much can
he
I
keep? He
didn't
quite Spider-Man 3 yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was a lot I liked, but I think he just got lost in plot twists. Like,
I'll tell you, the biggest disappointment to me was the Talia al Ghul story arc. I felt like that was, because I didn't even realize who she was and get that whole connection until after the movie was done. Like, it just totally blew by me. And like, I'm sitting there watching the credits and I'm like, oh, that's what happened there. But like, to me, he missed the mark on that, which... I was disappointed in, because I remember in Batman the Animated Series, that was such a rich story arc, and
Let's talk about that for a minute, because it's interesting that you say that, because this is something I've maintained, and then some people hear it, and they're like, yeah, okay, but they don't, you know, for all the plot holes that people want to point out with The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. and talk about, like, well, the Joker's plan depended on all these things coming to fruition, that's always a comic
book. Right.
And I'm willing to give people the... you know, some leeway if something right. doesn't work out in a way in which the real world will work out.
Right.
But I feel that, like, Nolan gets so twisted on himself in The Dark Knight Rises. I'm not even talking about the scene where Batman, suffers a broken back and then climbs out of a pit and walks back to Gotham City from, like, the middle of the desert. Yeah, like, forget that. I'll buy that. Sure, I'll take it. But there's a legitimate... If you or anyone listening can explain this to me, I'd love to actually have it explained.
Yeah.
Batman's still supposed to be the detective character,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Bane breaks Batman's back. I mean, yeah. It's full spoilers here, people, for this, but I mean, he just told you Talia al Ghul's in the movie, so. Bane breaks Batman's back. As he's doing this, he tells Batman, you know, in his weird little Mickey Mouse,
right.
Baron von whatever voice, you know, I came to manhood in the darkness. I grew in the darkness. You know,
right.
He's saying, I was a child and I grew up and I came to...
Right.
I grew to be a man
right.
in the dark.
Right.
Which later we find...
You adopted it.
After,
I was born to it.
Yeah, born to it. So I was born and I grew up and I came... And he uses the phrasing, I grew to a man in
right.
darkness. Later... When his back is broken, Bane takes him and dumps him in a hole somewhere.
Yeah.
And we eventually come to learn that this is a hole that Bane was in and
right.
grew up in, theoretically.
Yeah.
We have this entire weird visualization where Ra's al Ghul's ghost, but not his ghost,
right.
just Batman's fevered version
right.
of his ghost, comes and tells him that he's suddenly figuring out, goes, Ra's al Ghul was the little boy who
right.
escaped from the pit. And we right. see a child. And this is where the movie cheats. And it cheats and it messes up because it shows... the child jump out. Now,
right.
what we're looking at is actually a little girl, which is what
right.
we really realize later. This is maybe why you didn't catch this, you know, when, oh, it's Talia al Ghul, because the movie cheats. Because Batman says, oh, that's what happened. Bane escaped from the pit. But we
right.
know two things. They say, he mentions that, why is that man over there blind? Well, Bane was injured, and this guy patched him up.
Right.
And then Bane... you know, he blinded him or something, you know,
yeah.
to employ that, like, Bane was harmed inside the pit.
Right.
Bane grew to a man inside the pit. It's spoken in the movie.
Right.
Bane was harmed inside the pit and had his mask on.
Right.
We see an unharmed child jump out of
yeah.
the pit. Batman's like, yeah, Bane got out.
Right.
Even though he already knows that he grew up in the pit and he was
right.
harmed in the pit. That's a complete, I mean, that's what I consider a legitimate flub of
yeah.
writing, because you've got Batman the smart detective.
Right.
And you could say, well, he was all jacked up on painkillers. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't think that's legitimate. That makes the end a cheat, because
yeah.
Batman has researched the evidence and said...
Right.
After someone just watching the movie, like, no.
Right, right.
That's not right. So to me, that was huge. I didn't mind Anne Hathaway, but she's not Catwoman. I mean, she's least
yeah.
catty of
yeah.
Catwomen.
Yeah.
It just lost itself. But there were things I still loved about it. I actually was much more a fan of what was going on with the Robin-esque character.
I agree.
That was kind of compelling.
Yes.
And I really thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was cool. I really liked Gordon's kind of crisis of conscience that he has.
Yeah.
And he's kind of breaking down. And watching he and the Levitt character work together to try and bring the city back from the brink was way more interesting than anything Batman did.
I agree 100%.
And Alfred had some great scenes, too.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, to me, that's what... Excuse me. That's what really made it for me was those scenes apart from Batman. I mean, it was fascinating to see what he did with it in the whole the back-breaking thing, you know, which happened in the comic and all that stuff. But to me, you're right. The most fascinating aspect was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character and Gary Oldman's character working to try to get these people from the city and, you know, get them out and really, you know, take care of this lockdown that's going on. So yeah, I would definitely agree with that. We're, you know, winding down time. We're almost there. Just quick mention, Batman Brave and the Bold, Will Arnett is the voice of that, which is in 2008, same year as The Dark Knight. Did you watch any of that?
And you know, this is a bit of a lighter Batman.
It is.
They retain the sensibilities.
Yeah.
And he teams up sometimes with Aquaman and stuff and other, you know, you get the Justice League coming in.
He teamed up with Plastic Man in it.
He did. You know, the thing about the Brave and the Bold, that's one I really like because it kind of... And this is what I preach about Lego Batman. Lego Batman is one of the few things that manages to capture the kind of silly tone of the 60s Batman. It captures that fun, creative, the special effects edge of some of the Burton Batmans. It gets, you know, it mocks the moodiness. It manages to coalesce all these different like pop icon elements of Batman. And Brave and the Bold kind of does that, too, to some degree. You get a kid-friendly Batman that's fun. It has the Super Friends kind of feel. All the guys come in and out. But it still tells some reasonably good comic book stories.
Yeah.
I mean, again, take a note from the animation. And there were some good animated movies in there, too. I kind of liked Batman the Under the Red Hood.
Yes, that was a good one.
Which was cool, which is notable, too, because the Red Hood in that was voiced by
Jensen Ackles
from Supernatural. Yeah. And I thought, you know, everything. The Bruce Greenwood does a great Batman.
Yep. Yep.
There's a couple others. I know it comes later in chronology. Killing Joke had no use for, but a lot of that problems with that stem from the actual story for me.
Right.
I'm not a fan of that particular story.
Right.
I think we've beaten the horse on Batman v Superman. I think instead of talking about that movie, just a few notes I'll say about the worries I continue to have is now that we don't have Ben Affleck directing the Batman movie.
Yes, I know.
And what we've seen so far, and having this really bad little scene of him at the end of the Suicide Squad, I've kind of given up. I don't have a lot of hope for this Batman, which is a shame because I think, you know, one of the... nothing they've done with this character so far, I find it interesting.
Right.
I'm not going to be surprised if in a few years, once they've finally spent all this money and someone's finally like, no more Justice League movies.
Right, right.
We're going to see what happens. I mean, if Wonder Woman and the Flash take off, they made a lot of money off Batman vs. Superman. But I think it's one of those few cases where you get this giant hit, and I think everyone is kind of in the... most people are in the framework that... this is kind of bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't have to be, but I think it ended up
being I agree. I mean, I have, from what I've seen, I have some hope for Wonder Woman. You know, the trailers look good. I felt like Gail Goddard was, you know, did a good job with the character in Batman vs. Superman.
To me, the biggest problem with Batman vs. Superman was Batman.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. It's I just think they got that character wrong. But it wasn't Affleck playing him.
Yeah.
It's all down to the writing. And I guess when we wanted to do this from the adaptation standpoint, I think this is a case where here's my adaptation problem. I'm not sure that Zack Snyder knows there's another Batman story other than the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
And the problem with that, of course, Nathan, I think we discussed this, Dark Knight Returns is an anomaly.
Yes.
It's meant to be a side, almost alternate take on Batman.
Yeah.
Him fighting Superman. There are many reasons he fights Superman.
Right.
None of them have to do with the fact he's just mad at him because
right.
he's around. And it certainly isn't resolved because their mom's name's Martha.
Right.
What happens there, and we've spoke about this, I think, on the Pat podcast, that the other problem is he wants his cake and eat it too. You right. talked about how like the Burton Batman is still talking about the Bat of Gotham. They call him the Bat of Gotham in Batman vs. Superman, but we're supposed to believe he's at the end of this hardened career where yes. he's lost Jason Todd
yeah.
and that he's seen all this devastation, and yet they're still chasing him around, and Superman's still writing stories about how he's
right.
out there. And
right.
you're like, this makes no sense. They want him to be impulsive and impetuous like early Batman,
right.
but they want him to be hardened and grizzled like Dark
right.
Knight Returns. It's like he read Year One and Batman,
right.
The Dark Knight Returns, and you said, I know everything there is to
yeah.
know about Batman.
Let's put them together.
So if you gain anything from this, anyone who's listening and wants to write Batman, you know, it's okay to do your own take. I think Nolan proved that. In
yes.
some ways, Burton did. But let's not just take this character because he's pop culture and he's popular. Let's take some time to understand him, because it's a
yeah.
compelling character.
Yeah.
And I think particularly, you go back and watch some of these animated films where they examine those facets under the Red Hood story,
yeah.
and this was true of the comic too, really taking the time to look at what is the psychosis behind Batman's desire not to kill people.
Yes.
And what does it really look like in the real world?
Right.
You know, and that was made that story fascinating in its various versions.
Yeah.
That's what they need to get back to. That's what DC... If DC's going to want to make Batman
yes.
a live-action version... Right now, one of the best Batman movies in years is the Lego Batman movie.
Yes.
So go see it. If you
yeah.
like Batman, you're going to love it. That's pretty much it for us, isn't it?
Yeah, I just want to end on a lighter note. We touched on the video games, so let me just
yeah,
say...
You have
Batman, Batman Arkham Asylum, Batman Arkham City. You have Arkham Origins, which was done in the same vein as a prequel to both of those, but it was also done by a different company, and they did a good job at blending the stories together. So it's still worth checking out. And then Batman Arkham Knight. So there are four in there. All of them, I believe, except for Batman Arkham Origins, were voiced by Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill as the Joker. And so, you know, terrific voice acting in it. Deals more with the Oracle storyline, Barbara Gordon as the Oracle, which is a fascinating storyline, stems from the Killing Joke. And actually brings in some of the Killing Joke in Arkham Knight,
yeah.
but not the despicable aspects that
and
are
I
there.
Don't mind the Oracle character. I think her genesis and everything in that storyline particularly are a little unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's probably a talk and a discussion for a different
yes,
day.
Yes.
But I think that's
so yeah, the games are great.
Check
them out. And all right, well, we're gonna sign off. And
I guess we touched on everything but Gotham. I guess what we could
yeah.
say, I haven't watched much Gotham.
Yeah, neither have
I. I think it's definitely more of an experiment. I think Batman may finally be coming into his own. I'm not certain.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't be. I'm sure maybe down the road we could discuss it. But to me, it kind of falls outside of that because there's less about the characterization of Batman himself,
right.
which is sort of what we were
right.
discussing tonight. So mention it. Didn't forget it. Have a great night, everyone. Take care.
Peace out.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.